A recent survey on the American diet has yielded some not so pretty results. Most of us have no idea what a healthy plate is supposed to look like. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, here to dish out the facts after this.
Why are most email programs free? Companies use them as bait to lure people into their system so they can scan their data and sell them to advertisers. It's like a hotel giving out free rooms so they can film people sleeping and then sell the video. You'd never agree to that. StartMail restores your privacy. No one but you sees your sensitive data, and it costs less than a postage stamp a week. StartMail.com. It's email you can trust.
Nearly half of surveyed Americans believe that protein-based foods alone supply us with the daily energy we need. But the truth is, whole grains are supposed to be our central source. More concerning still was the underemphasis on fruits and vegetables. Of 2,000 adults surveyed, the average person thought grains, fruits, and veggies should fill just over a third of their plate, when it should really be at least half. And most people are falling short of even a third. Eating too much meat and processed foods and following fad diets are making America unhealthy. Let's get back to eating what our bodies actually need. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, encouraging everyone to stay mentally healthy too by saying no to AI. Join us at realisgood.org.
This is the Dr. Catherine Albrecht Show.
Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop, call up an army against Babylon. Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop, call up an army against Babylon. Wave your hand to encourage them. Wave your hand to encourage them as they march into the palaces of the high and mighty. I, the Lord, have dedicated these soldiers for this task. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger. And they will rejoice when I am exalted.
Hello, Catherine Albrecht here. Try my second day on YouTube. It wasn't quite as smooth today, but hopefully I am there if you check me out on YouTube and try texting me in the little text window there on YouTube, and hopefully I'll be able to text you back. All right. So, gosh, it's been a busy day. Couple of things. I am buying a new used car. And I have some advice for people buying used cars. First of all, they're going to cost double what you think that to cost. I was broadcasting the show back when then President Obama destroyed all of the used cars and changed the used car market in this country forever. If you remember that, that was, more than 10 years ago now. The decision, if you want to call it that, the pressure, whatever it was that caused President Obama to decide to destroy all of the used cars, the federal government bought those used cars back and they crushed them. They did not turn them into vehicles for the indigent or for single parents who were just trying to get by. They destroyed them. They turned them all into big blocks of metal and then probably sent them into a landfill. I think some of that metal got recycled and a whole lot of it just wound up as additional garbage in this country. The problem, of course, well, the goal was to revitalize the auto industry, because if people could not buy used cars, then I suppose they would need to buy new cars. But what that mindset left out was the fact that most people who want to buy a new car will. And most people who are buying used cars are not buying a used car because they could buy a new car and just decided not to. They're buying a used car in most cases because they cannot afford the $25,000, $35,000, $45,000, $55,000, $65,000 for a new car. I was in the showroom at the used car dealer that I was looking at this car, because my current, I have a couple of cars, but the one that is getting replaced has over 250,000 miles on it. I will point out it's a Honda. I'm a huge fan of Hondas because of their incredible longevity. But it even Hondas, even cars that can go over 200,000 miles, eventually turn into rattle traps that are costing you more money than you're saving by hanging on to them. And I think the time had finally come. We've replaced all the brakes. We've replaced fuse boxes. We have replaced all the tires. We have done thing after thing after thing to this car. And it's finally to the point now where you mechanics are going to laugh at me. The container that contains the steering fluid is rusted out and can no longer hold the steering fluid. So unfortunately, this car now, in order to turn it, I'm developing Popeye forearms or biceps, I guess, because of the amount of strength that is required to turn a car with no steering fluid in it. So you can pour it in, it'll be good for a couple of hours, a couple of days maybe, but eventually you're right back to just all your might trying to turn this thing. So the time had come. We need to get rid of the car. Its trade-in value is about $250, I've been told, so I'm not even going to bother with that. But unlike in the past when I have purchased used cars, and they've been very reasonable, the prices are out of this world. I mean, astronomically high. I cannot find a car with any decent longevity, and I've restricted myself to a couple of different brands that can get high mileage. I can't find one for under $15,000-$16,000, even with close to 100,000 miles on it. That's how insane it has become. So if you have not been in the market for a used car lately, if you have always leased your cars or put them on payments or done other things, you may not be able to relate. But if you're like me and my family, both my family of origin and when I was married, my husband and I never once financed a car. We always saved up our money and then took cash, as it were. You know, it's not $100 bills, but a cashier's check from the bank. And we have always purchased our cars outright from private parties. On one prior occasion, I did buy a used car from a dealership, and it turned out to be worth every penny of the extra money I spent, because as soon as I got it off the lot, within about 6 months, I discovered that they had sold it to me with a big problem, and it was going to cost close to $5,000 to fix it, and they just took care of it. So I was like, huh, I like this dealer thing. So the tips I want to give you today, first of all, is yikes, hang on to your cars if you can. I am a big believer in purchasing used cars, because a car is one of those things that the minute you take possession of it, its value decreases instantly. And that's not the kind of thing you want to be investing a large amount of money in. You do not want to take large chunks of money and put them into something that will become worth less and less and less, especially when that being worth less, because when that devaluation process occurs the moment you take the keys from the dealer and sign on the dotted line. And that is one of the big problems with the car industry today, is that some of these new cars will cost you $40,000, but the minute you drive it off the lot, they're already worth $32,000, simply because they're no longer brand new from the dealership. So used cars are the way to go. If you can find a used car that will keep its value, obviously at that point you're looking for it to keep its value, but so is the person selling it to you. But you will not be paying those dealer showroom prices if you get yourself a used car. So anyway, that's the thing I'm in the market for. And I have a couple of tips, because I just learned this today. When you have found a used car at the dealership, and that's where I found mine, and you have decided that that's the car you think you want, have a mechanic take a very close look at it. Have them take it for a test drive, kick the tires, quote unquote. Have them look under the hood. Have them test all of the things that they normally test. I found out that the car that I had a 1 o'clock appointment today to go and purchase and give a cashier's check for, I had it looked at by a friend who is a mechanic, and he came back with three very concerning facts about the car. Not that would concern me not to buy it, but that would concern me not to spend the kind of money they were asking. So the price that they have given it, if you are not familiar with the Kelley Blue Book, you should become familiar with it because it's an awesome resource. It used to be an actual blue book that those of us in the 80s and 90s purchased a copy of. It is now online, but you can go online to kelleybluebook.com and for free, you can type in the year, the make, the model, the color, whether it has leather seats or not, whether it has a sunroof. You can put in all the details. You can put in your zip code because different zip codes are hard on cars in different ways. And it will give you the value of your car. It'll give you the trade-in value if you're trying to sell your car. It will give you the private party purchase price. Boy, that's a lot of P's. That's what you would get if you were to go on Facebook Marketplace, or I guess back in the day you'd go on Craigslist, or back in the day you'd go on Auto Trader and find a private party selling a car. And then it will give you the dealer price. And obviously the dealer price is going to be considerably higher than the private party price because, well, you're dealing with a known entity, presumably. Not all dealers are reputable and above board, but these days you can go and look at the reviews of the dealer, of the dealership. And if you find they have fewer than 4 stars, then you probably want to stay away because even though it's a dealer charging you a higher price, you're probably dealing with people who are not super scrupulous. So once you know the Kelley Blue Book price for the car, then you have a negotiating point to start from. And so if you're at the used car dealership or you're negotiating with the person you found online, and they have this car available, you can say, well, you know, here's the Kelley Blue Book price. You're a couple $100 over it. Or I would really like for you to be a few $100 under it. And you can negotiate with them based on that price. So in my case, and I'll just bring you up to speed on what happened to me today. In my case, they were asking exactly the Kelley Blue Book price. But my friend found out that it was going to cost me probably $1,500 on top of the price to make this car, well, ship shape. All right, I'll tell you more about it in a minute. Catherine Albrecht here. I am on YouTube. All right, see you in a minute.
Why are most email programs free? Companies use them as bait to lure people into their system so they can scan their data and sell them to advertisers. It's like a hotel giving out free rooms so they can film people sleeping and then sell the video. You'd never agree to that. StartMail restores your privacy. No one but you sees your sensitive data, and it costs less than a postage stamp a week. StartMail.com. It's email you can trust. Your email is your business, but if it's spied on, hacked, or intercepted, it can fall into the wrong hands. The solution is encryption, a high-tech way to scramble your data so no one can read it. For years, only the technical elite could use this powerful tool, until StartMail came along. StartMail not only lets you encrypt the email you send, it encrypts your entire account. Encryption. It's just one more way StartMail.com keeps you safe.
For I have chosen you, don't be afraid, for I am with you, don't be discouraged, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will hold you up. I will hold you up. For I've chosen you. Don't be afraid.
All right, I'm back. Catherine Albrecht here. And in the background, there's my kitty. That is Meansy. And she's all curled up and sleeping. She's an old kitty. She is a little bit senile these days. I never thought that would happen. She was always the kitten. She's kitten-sized, very sweet kitty in my background. And you probably hear my dog panting in the background, too. That's one of the big advantages and disadvantages, I suppose, of having a home studio now is you get to see all my pets. Get to see my three cats that are likely to pop up in the background. All right, so I was talking about used cars and the Kelley Blue Book price of the used car, which is something you should be aware of, and having a friend test drive the car. He's actually my mechanic. He's a neighbor who works on cars and has a whole background as a mechanic. He's retired now, but he drove the car and he said, "It's a great car. It looks really good. It has 96,000 miles on it." Which I know, but it's a brand of car that is likely to last a long time. I'll go ahead and tell you what it is. It's a Subaru. I've never owned a Subaru before, but as I was out looking at used car lots, I saw one of them with 325,000 miles on it. It was only like $2,000. It was really cheap, but that's a lot of miles. And I did a little research and I learned that Subarus on average will last up to 200,000 or 250,000 miles. Now, I say all of that with trepidation because I live in Michigan, and in Michigan, it is considered very poor form to buy anything but an American car. But I am originally from Los Angeles, where no one buys American cars. Yeek, I'm ducking. In this part of the world, I live about an hour from Detroit, and pretty much everyone you meet either has worked in the auto industry, has a friend who works in the auto industry, has neighbors who work in the, I mean, pretty much this is, they don't call it the Motor City for nothing. So this is very definitely a place where American cars are the norm. You see lots of Jeeps and Fords and GMCs and Chryslers and very few Subarus or Hondas, which is, or Volvos or Nissans, which are the cars that I've owned in the past. So I'm a little bit of an anomaly out here, but I'm kind of getting used to that anyway, because I'm not really a Midwesterner. Eek. But in any event, trying to find a car that meets my parameters of lasting a very long time and being reliable, it's tough. So I found this car. I thought it was great. And my mechanic, my friend, gets back to me and says, "You know, it only has one key." And I thought, well, how bad can that be? And then I looked it up. It is $525. I actually got the quote in writing from the Subaru dealer who would have to replace it. $525 to make a replacement key. So right off the lot, I'm going to drive off the lot paying their Kelley Blue Book price and immediately going to have to invest $525 plus an hour round trip, plus probably an hour waiting around, all the gas, all the time, all the hassle for just to get a second key. All right, so that was thing number one that was concerning. The second thing is that this sounds very minor and very petty, but the windshield wipers need replacing. And you would think that a car dealership that is taking a car through all of the 10-point inspection or whatever it is that they do, I'm just like 100-point inspection, I don't know what they do, but you would think that replacing the windshield wipers would be de rigueur, would be an automatic thing that they would do, but they hadn't done it and did not intend to. The third thing was even more concerning, and that is that the module, the little motor controller thing that makes the windows go up and down, did not work. So from the driver's side, you could get, how did this work? I think from the driver's side, you could get the driver's window up and down, but you couldn't get any of the other ones up and down. And from the passenger side, you could get the driver window up and down, but not your own, I think, something like that. And it turns out that that is a part that actually wore out, and it's going to have to be ordered, and time and money are going to have to be put into that. So had I not had my friend drive this car, I wouldn't have noticed. I mean, it's wintertime. It's like 25 degrees out. I'm probably not going to be opening the windows or even thinking about whether I need to open the windows or not. So long story short, rather than going over with a cashier's check for the Kelley Blue Book price that they quoted me and walking out of there with $1,500 worth of repairs to do, I was wise. I was smart. I said, "Hang on a minute. What about this, this, and this?" And they went back and talked to the used car preparer people in the back and said, well, all right, we'll take care of those things for you grudgingly. And so I was either going to say, if you make me take care of it, you're going to need to deduct it from the price, or you're just going to have to give me a car that's in good shape. So I tell you those things because buying a used car, well, buying a new car, I think is insane. This car new would be above $30,000, and I wasn't going to pay that. And like I said, when the minute I drove it off the lot, it would be worth far less. The value would immediately go down. So I do support the idea of buying used cars. I've heard many arguments for leasing cars, and they're pretty compelling, but they don't apply in my case. So if you're going to buy a used car, though, you need to be very aware of the Kelley Blue Book. You also need to know, where was this? Hang on, he told me this. Nowadays, when they give you the quote on the car, they should provide the VIN number. In fact, the VIN number, the vehicle ID number, that's a good repetitive one, that vehicle ID number, the VIN number, that VIN number should be provided on the sticker for the car in the lot. So if you're looking through a used car lot after hours, or you're just there on your own kind of looking, you can take out your phone and you can look up that VIN number. And there are a number of really important things you can determine from the VIN number, because auto body shops are required to record the VIN numbers in cases of accidents. That VIN number has to show how many owners the car has had. This one particular car has had a single owner, which is always a good sign. But it records a lot of things about the provenance, I love that word, provenance, the background of where the car came from and what has happened to it before it came to you. So let me see if I can find you the name of the place. I didn't actually look this up. My mechanic looked it up, and I'm going to find his comment here on my phone. I'm not going to say it in case I get it wrong. I gave him the VIN number. And he said he was going to look it up in Car Facts, not FAX, but FACTS.com. Car Facts. That's hard to pronounce. Car Facts. Car Facts. .com, CARFACTS.com. And he looked it up on Carfax and discovered that it had actually been, in a fender bender. And he was able then to look closely, because it had happened to the front right fender, and he was able to look and determine whether it had bent the frame or done any other damage. And fortunately, it had not. But Kelley Blue Book and Carfax, FACTS, are the two places you absolutely want to look, with the VIN number and all the details on the car. And then do your homework, do your due diligence, find out what is wrong with the car, because there will be something wrong with it, guaranteed, if it's an older car. This one's a 2018. So there will be something. There's going to be something going on. And you can use that as a negotiating point in your favor. You can say, well, go online, look it up. It's $525 for the key. I looked it up and found out on Reddit that people were complaining, do you know it's over $400 to replace a Subaru key? And I was like, it is. And I then called up the Subaru dealer and spoke to the service department, talked to a guy named John there, and said, hey, John, I'm considering buying a 2018 Subaru. It doesn't have a key. Can you guys make a duplicate? Oh, yes, we can. Well, what would it cost? Well, blah, 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 plus tax. I said, could you write me a quote for the total? And then I took that $525.67 quote, and I took it to the folks who were going to sell me the car. And I said, here's your price. Here's this. What are you going to do? And they lowered the price. So keep that in mind. Be a shrewd negotiator. Don't accept the first price that they give you. But unless you're really rich and buying brand new cars, or they're provided to you from your workplace, we're all sort of in the same boat of needing to purchase cars in an environment where previous administrations have made that very expensive. Yeah. It's painful. But hopefully by the end of this week, I will be the owner of a brand new used car. So I'll keep you posted, let you know about it. The other thing that's super cool these days is if you do buy a used car, this one has fabric seats, and I've always had leather seats. I was a little concerned about, are they going to get yucky? Are they going to get snow in them? Are they going to have something spill in them? And I went on Amazon And I found that they make gorgeous, at least in the pictures, I hope, gorgeous seat covers that are leather. They have some with diamonds on them. Not that I want that. They have ones with fancy stitching. They have sports car looking ones. They have a lot of very fancy, nice looking seat covers. And I thought, well, why should I splurge and spend extra money on an 8-year-old car with leather seats if I could just do this? So I will keep you posted. I'll let you know if that's worth doing. But for those of you with cloth seats, and especially if you have kids or if you have pets in your car, you may want to consider doing likewise and getting yourself a seat cover. So last night was the State of the Union address. President Trump, I did not watch the whole thing. I watched parts of it, and parts of it I agreed with and parts of it I did not agree with. I found it really interesting. The main part that I tuned into, I think about 40 minutes into it, was him saying about how consumer prices were lower than they've ever been. Consumer prices for pharmaceutical drugs, which I haven't noticed that, but remains to be seen. That's pretty cool if he actually did that. Prices for eggs going down 60%. Well, that wasn't hard to do when a dozen eggs was costing $7-$8 for a particular period of time, especially here in Michigan, because we just enacted a law last year that they all have to be cage-free. And I think there's like a federal lawsuit against Michigan for that. But yeah, the prices really shot through the roof. Last time I was at Aldi, they were $2.09 a dozen instead of $7.99. So yeah, was that President Trump? Probably not. All right, stay tuned. I'm Catherine Albrecht. Be right back.
Is your email box overrun with spam? With a StartMail account, you'll never have to give your real email address to a stranger again. Online shopping, newsletter subscriptions, getting that 30% off coupon, they all need your email address. But with StartMail, you can invent new addresses or aliases linked to your inbox behind the scenes and give those out to people while keeping your real address hidden. It's just one more protection from StartMail.com.
Red alert, Yahoo users. You've fallen in a trap that could ruin your life if you keep using Yahoo.
You consent to sharing all data in your email account with our AI providers, and you grant us a perpetual license to use, display, publish, and publicly distribute your content in any media known now or in the future, and to let other users access and distribute it as well.
Yikes! It's time to switch to StartMail, the only email that's AI-free and private by design. StartMail.com. Use promo code JD.
The Lord is a faithful God. Blessed are those who wait for his help. The Lord is a faithful God. Blessed are those who wait for his help. He'll be gracious if you ask for help. He will surely respond to the sound of your cries. The Lord is a faithful God. Blessed are those who wait his help. The Lord is a faithful God. Blessed are those who wait for his help.
And sometimes it does involve waiting, by the way. Just to be clear, I had a 7-year wait that I had to get through, and it was one of the hardest things I've ever done, is waiting for the Lord's help through a 7-year desert of hardship. Really, really awful hardship. For those of you who knew me before, when I used to do this radio program and then I disappeared for 7 years, that's where I was. I was in the desert waiting, 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 waiting for the Lord's help. And yet throughout that process, I never questioned whether he was there. I always knew he was there. It was just a matter of waiting for his timing. And I was like, Lord, your timing and my timing aren't the same, because I would have already stepped in and swooped in and done something here, but I'm just going to wait on you. And the one thing, and I've shared this before, halfway through my 7-year desert, I was calling out to him. I was in the shower, never forget where I was. I was in the shower and I was just desperate, crying and saying, Lord, how long, what's going to, like, please. And he said, hang on, because there's something for you on the other side of this. And in 7 years, that's all I heard from him, was about halfway through the words, hang on, I've got something, be patient and wait. And I did. So I say that to encourage those of you who are going through a rough time. It doesn't mean the Lord's forgotten you. He never forgot me. He was there the entire time. He was very aware. He was making sure that of the hardships that came my way, nothing would destroy me. Nothing would come along that I couldn't handle. Or if it did, he helped me to handle it behind the scenes without my awareness. But I felt like it was not the best 7 years of my life. Let me put it that way. It was really not. It was very hard. It was a slog. It was painful. It was absolutely horrific. And there were many times I wondered if I would even survive it. But I did survive it because I knew if I just had patience and waited that he had something for me. And so no matter what you're going through, I want you to remember that as well, that if you serve the Lord, if you know the Lord, if you love the Lord, sometimes, as hard as it is to understand the reason, but sometimes he allows us to go through those periods where we have to learn to rely on him. And the world would say you're having to learn to rely on yourself, but that is not what I was learning. What I was learning through that is that even when I come to the end of myself, even when I don't have the resources to get through, I will still get through because he will be there silently carrying me. And it is true that he had something for me on the other end. As soon as that period of time ended, he said, get your radio show back and proclaim my name to the nations. And it has been going great guns ever since. So I encourage you to continue to report for duty in your heart every day, no matter how far away he seems or no matter how much he's causing you to wait. It's worth it. The wait is worth it. All right. A couple of stories in the news. One of them, this one kind of got my attention, is brain rot for real? Is there really such a thing as brain rot? Well, we all know there is. We all know there is. In fact, there's the kind of brain rot that we experience on the short term, which is the equivalent of eating nothing but junk food for an entire day and then feeling physically sick. If you consume nothing but media content and screen time for a day, you will feel psychologically and mentally unwell. You just will. And we all know it. If you binge Netflix, if you sit indoors and dry your curtains because you have a day off and you watch 10 episodes of a particular sitcom or a particular series, drama series, at the end of it, I mean, you don't feel very good. You get up from the sofa and you're a little woozy and your muscles don't feel quite right. Maybe your back hurts a little bit. You just don't feel good in your mind. So there is such a thing as brain rot from that, from consuming content that is, we were never meant to consume that. Think about it. Back in the early days of humanity, people did not sit around staring at a wall for 10 hours straight. They didn't even sit around listening to other people tell stories for 10 hours straight. They didn't sit around staring into a campfire for 10 hours straight, because who could, right? The contents that we are viewing through screens are designed to capture our attention. They're designed to keep us entertained. They're designed to keep us glued and watching. They're not designed to have us go, okay, enough of that. Let me get up and do something else. I remember back when I had television, and this was years ago, before I started at Harvard. I was in my mid-20s, I guess. And I had not had a television for a whole series of different reasons. And when I got my apartment at Harvard, my little room, my rented room in an apartment at Harvard, I got a television. And of all the horrible times to get a TV, the horrible time to get a TV was when I was starting a very rigorous academic program and having to go to classes and do a lot of reading and studying, and there I had a TV. And I didn't have the TV for long. And here's why I didn't have the TV for long. Because when I turned it on after not having watched it, now this would have been in 1990, when did I graduate? I don't know, like 92, 93, something like that. I hadn't watched TV for a number of years, and in 92, 93, I turned the TV on and flipped through the channels in horror because the kinds of things that were on TV were awful. They were despicable. They were murders and blasphemies and hatreds, and I wasn't really even walking the Christian walk in at that time. It wasn't until 1999 that my life really, really turned around and the Lord picked me up and said, "You will do this." So at that time, it wasn't even my religious or Christian self or my biblical worldview that was causing me to be disgusted. It was literally the contents of the TV were disgusting. And every time I turn on TV now, I think how naive I was back then. That was child's play. That was nothing compared to what's on TV now. Now it's supernatural and it's occult, and it is not only murder but torture and psychological torture and horrific things that come straight from the mind of the enemy, straight from the pits of hell. Just awful, awful things. So this idea that brain rot is real, it comes not only, though, from binge-watching TV shows and fake content. It also comes from just being glued to our phones. I did an interview yesterday and was talking about what has happened since Spy Chips came out in 2005. That is the best-selling book that Liz McIntyre and I co-authored on radio frequency ID, and the plans of the retail industry to put a tracking microchip into every object on Earth, literally everything on Earth, every sapling tree that grew so you could know when it was cut down, and just every single thing on Earth they wanted to track and monitor. And what has happened since then is that now they don't need to put those tracking chips in our underwear and in our shoes and in our purses and on our ballpoint pens in order to track us around, because what happened between 2005 and now is the cell phone. The cell phone happened. We now have tracking devices that make the tracking devices they had planned to hide in our belongings really not necessary. You don't need to, Bank of America had a patent for a floor mat that you would step on as you stepped into the bank branch. It would read a tag in your shoe without you knowing it. It would identify you, and on the teller's screen would pop up a message as to your value. This person has $10 million in this bank. Treat them with extra care. This person has $3.82. Close your teller window. Time to take a break and send them to the ATM. So that's the kind of patents that were coming out, and they were based on like picture frames in museums having reader devices in them that would be reading our ID cards through our wallets. Weird stuff. Weird, weird stuff. Read the book Spy Chips if you want to get the whole big picture of it. And by the way, with Spy Chips, even though they no longer have to do that because now they can track us through our cell phones, the intent, the design, the desire of them, them being the marketing industry, them being the consumer products industry, them being the government, them being really anyone who has a vested interest in watching you and parting you from your money or your freedom, they, quote unquote, they still want to do all those things. Nothing's changed as to their motivation. It's just changed as to the strategy and the methods and the technology through which they're going to do it. Other than that, it's all the same. If anything, it's worse now. There is an even greater desire to watch, control, monitor, and surveil than there's ever been before. But the cell phone is what changed. The cell phone came along 2009. By 2011, the smartphone, that is, cell phones were around before that, but the smartphone. And now we're to the point where, unlike RFID, where people were protesting in the streets and saying, "You cannot put a tracking device in my shoe, darn it," and we had protests all over the world, the cell phone, who has protested a cell phone recently? When have you ever seen a group of people holding picket signs and marching down the street saying, "Darn it, stop surveilling us through our cell phones"? It's not happening. They have found ways of making you appreciate the surveillance, not only tolerate it, but be fully aware of it and agree to it. How do they do that? Well, I use Google Maps. I want to know my way to get somewhere. I was horrible and constantly getting lost before. Okay, you want to know where I am all the time so that I can figure out where I'm going? Okay, you can do that. My gosh, you would have had to do that over our dead bodies a couple generations ago. All right, stay tuned. I'll be right back.
I've been hearing a lot about the LifeWave patches, and they sound amazing. And I'm thinking I want to try them for myself. But can you tell me how they work?
You wear the patch, which is about the size of a quarter, 12 hours a day, 12 on, 12 off. And the patch uses your body's own light and energy and copper peptides to reactivate the dormant stem cells in your body. Once a stem cell has been reactivated, it can be used by any of the cells in your body that need it, creating a healing and growth process you haven't experienced since your youth. So in a nutshell, this is how the LifeWave X39 patch works.
You can purchase the LifeWave patches by going to americasfreedomnetwork.com. Then click on the Natural Health Products button at the top of the page. That's americasfreedomnetwork.com.
Look, this product works, and you've got nothing to lose because there's a 100% money-back guarantee.
That's americasfreedomnetwork.com. Thank you.
Our city strong, we're surrounded by the walls of God's salvation. Open the gates to all who are righteous. Allow the faithful to enter. You will keep in perfect peace. All the trust in you and all whose thoughts are fixed on you. Trust in the Lord always. Trust in the Lord always. Trust in the Lord always. For the Lord God is the eternal rock.
And back. Catherine Albrecht here. Got to fix all my lighting and cameras and everything, but I'll get there. I promise I will get there. All right. I was talking about brain rot, and the I think the thing that goes hand in hand with it is the devaluing of privacy, the devaluing of keeping things to yourself, the devaluing of our own autonomy and independence. I remember talking about this on the show that I had been to a high school classroom. I'm trying to remember why I was even there. I think I was looking at schools for my kids. But I had walked into a classroom and it said, there was a big poster on the wall and it said, is a life not watched even worth living? I think that's what it said. And it was, at the time, I thought, that is disgusting. What kind of a comment is that? That is prepping these young people to expect and anticipate being watched. And at that time, the Big Brother television series had come out. Talk about an awful name for a TV show. Big Brother, of course, is the technological, nightmarish, governmental observation program in the George Orwell novel 1984 that was watching people all the time. And Big Brother is watching you is not a comforting thing of, oh, you've got a Big Brother looking out for you. No, it was Big Brother who has a name like a nice guy, but is really an autocratic, horrific, nightmarish surveillance overlord who wants to crush you like a bug if you do not behave. And yet we came out with these, but society came out with these Big Brother television shows. Do you remember those? Nowadays, they're not even shocking, but at the time, they were mortifying. The idea that you would put a bunch of people into a house, into the most private space that people have, a place that prior to those shows was completely off limits to cameras or observation or really anybody being in there, and put people in a house in relationships with one another and put the entire house under surveillance. And not only under surveillance with cameras everywhere, but put those cameras onto national television so millions of people could watch. And rather than view that as the most disgusting, horrific thing that you would have to, that you would do to prisoners or that would be a torturous punishment, it became a mark of popularity and fame to actually be on one of those shows. And so people were clamoring over themselves themselves for the opportunity to have their daily, day-to-day private moments inside of their own homes monitored, and not just monitored, but broadcast to the world. So that poster, "Is a Life Worth Living, or Is a Life Not Watched Even Worth Living," was, my instincts were right. Because I looked at that and I said, that is a very bad message, and that is going to train this next generation to think that being watched is a good thing instead of a bad thing. And sure enough, that's what it's done. So now we have people streaming every aspect of their lives. We have people putting cameras in their bedrooms, in their homes, in their cars, all over the place, watching them, watching them, watching them. We have parents taking videos of their children having normal childhood moments and posting them online for internet points and fame and money. The world that we're living in now has turned the concept of privacy and being watched and observed and filmed and have that film shared from being a thing of complete horror to being a thing to be longed for, to be sought after. Right. In the same way, it used to be deeply shameful to be a prostitute. It used to be deeply shameful to be a porn star. That was the kind of thing that low-life people resorted to or were interested in or turned to. That was the scum of the earth. Not that the people participating in it were themselves scum, because they're beloved children of God, but they had fallen quite far to get to that place. And society's attitude about them was an attitude of either disgust or compassion, one or the other. But it was not an attitude of admiration or aspiring to be like them. And yet nowadays, there are young women who very much aspire to be porn stars because they're stars, they're famous, or who very much aspire to have OnlyFans accounts and make a whole lot of money through something that in a previous generation would have been unthinkably just degrading, truly degrading. And so we have flipped things so far around, calling good evil and evil good. And the Bible says, woe, 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 suffering, misery, woe to those who call evil good and good evil. And we're living in those times, my friends. We are living in those times. Don't fall for it, though. You do not have to agree just because society says that these things are good or right or okay or the thing to aspire to. You can join us here on our own little boat where we are saying, no, that's not good. It's not good to have people watching you in your private moments. It's not good to have people undressing you with their minds or their eyes or right in front of, you know, have you undressing for them right in front of a camera. That's disgusting. That's not good. There's nothing good in that. There's just nothing good in that. So Washington Post has an article here on brain rot and how too much time online can affect your mind. I would argue that it can affect your mind. It can affect your morals. It can affect, as we talked about yesterday, the food you consume. People who spend a lot of time online eat very differently from people who do not. The composition of the food you eat and the amount of food you eat, not just the inactivity is what makes people fat, but actually spending a lot of screen time, especially playing video games, changes the quantity and the quality of the food you eat, not just the inactivity. So you would be better off sitting alone in the room, not moving, than sitting in a room doing a video game in terms of nutritional content and physical well-being. All right, if you don't know the term brain rot by now, congratulations, you probably don't have it. It's slang to describe the idea that being very online is harming our brains, and it describes the feeling of coming up for air after spending too many hours scrolling through low-quality social media content. By the way, those shorts, those very short videos that are shorter than like 3 minutes long, they have actually found that those are associated with a whole lot of attention issues. And you kind of know they are, right? You sort of know that, but they're actually now they actually now have pretty hardcore research evidence that they're affecting the structure of people's brains. So limit your time watching those. Limit your time. I've been trying to be more conscious. I have I've said this before. The way you break a habit, the number one step to breaking a habit is realizing you want to break the habit. Right? That's the first one. Realizing you have a habit in the first place, and then making a decision, a conscious decision that you want to change that habit. That is the most important first step. And at that point, it's not just clockwork where you go, I've decided I'm going to change. I'm going to do it. It is a process where you find yourself after the fact going, darn, I did the thing I don't want to do again. And then you catch yourself closer to it and you go, I just finished doing the thing. And then you find yourself in the middle and go, I've spent the last 10 minutes doing the thing and I'm going to stop. And then you find yourself going, I'm 5 minutes into doing the thing. I'm going to stop doing this thing because I'm aware of it now. And eventually you get to the point where you haven't done the thing in a while and you go, I haven't done that thing in a long time. Huh, that's a thing I used to do. I've broken that habit. So your task, your challenge in order to stop the brain rot, in order to stop the unhealthy content, is to make a decision you want to stop it, pray about it, that's always super effective, and ask the Holy Spirit to help you. The Holy Spirit lives within you, gives you discernment, and will actually speak to you, and the Holy Spirit will say to you, in your heart, in your spirit, in your mind, you will be reminded of, oh yeah, I wasn't going to do that, or oh yeah, I better stop doing that, or I'm doing it, better stop. And you will eventually get to the point where you are recognizing it earlier and earlier on. So for me and the YouTube shorts, which really, am I wrong in thinking those only came out within the last like 6-8 months, maybe a year? I don't remember them being around before, but they're everywhere. And like everybody else, I just sucked right on into them and I would realize that I've watched like 20 stupid videos of nothing. And I then became aware of it, said, I want to stop doing this, and then started figuring out that I had just done it, started figuring out 10 minutes into doing it, started figuring out 5 minutes in, and now I realize like a video or two in, oh yeah, that's what these are. I'm not watching these, and I turn it off, and it's helped a lot. So don't beat yourself up. This stuff is designed to suck you in. It is introduced all around us. You do not have to go to a porn shop. You don't have to, you know, get in your car and drive to the seedy part of town and do a drug deal. This stuff is served to you in your home. It's served to you at your workplace. You pick up the phone to make a phone call. You pick up the phone to answer a text, and there it is. So don't blame yourself, but once you become aware of it, don't participate. Don't give in. Don't let them win. All right, there's a kernel of important truth to what sounds like a silly term, brain rot, says, this is a new, I'll see if I can get her on the show. Her name's Catherine Price, and she has a new book out called How to Break Up with Your Phone. And I think we, those of us who would like a, I don't know, a change in relationship with our phones would benefit from this book. So I'll post a link to this article about brain rot and phones and exhaustion that we are experiencing from our devices. I'll post it on my website at catherine-albrecht.com. All right. Wow, this hour flew by. I will see you guys tomorrow. Looking forward to it. I have, I'll tell you tomorrow. I have cool stuff coming up. All right. See you then. Thank you for listening. God bless you. Bye-bye.